Blog Talk Radio.
Hi guys, football as well. Welcome to the Steve Anderson Radio Show. Hope you guys are having a wonderful, wonderful evening. I'd first like to say, guys, when I was doing the video, I had numerous of people texting, calling me, asking me, Steve, are you okay? Like, you're tired? What was going on? What's on your mind? I was okay. I wasn't tired or anything. And thank you guys so much for that. It really means a lot. But I would say that what it was is I was so angry, and I was just trying to figure out what I wanted to say without just going off and just, you know, I mean, the topic tonight, what we're going to be discussing is just a loss for words. And that's why I decided to just reel the words, but major words. You know, W-H-Y, why? So thanks again for that. Again, I hope you guys are having a wonderful evening. And on the 31st, and at the same time, we're going to be discussing a very, very troubling topic. That's episode 102. And the topic is why, in regards to Tyre Nichols beaten to death by five, now supposedly seven police officers that was involved in Memphis, Tennessee. So that was St. Jude's. I used to go up there and qualify for that tournament, the PGA up in Memphis. And I know people in Memphis, and Memphis has always been that little cool, quiet town. I know the crime has always been kind of like iffy, but it's I think some point it had gotten to a point that was getting better. And I love, you know, going through Memphis playing that tournament and going down to the Sanderson Forum in Mississippi playing that tournament. So I feel for the people in Memphis and also too across the world, and especially the parents of Tyre Nichols. I really, really feel you know, it's sad, but at the same time, let's all, you know, get prayers out to her, his mom, his family, dad, and let everybody get the prayers out to his family, little girl, his girlfriend, wife. I haven't gotten that far into it, but I know it's so many things that's moving, so many moving pieces and things are going around with this situation that happened in Memphis. But guys, if you can, get home. Just keep praying for the family that they could actually see and move in the right direction to keep them the faith, the strength to move forward with this situation that occurred with Tyre Nichols. Just make sure we do that. But also, too, I'd like to say before we get started that we're going to talk about the good officers that we have on the forces right now. We'll talk about that. But I'll probably have some people joining me. Matter of fact, I said, okay, thanks for calling Steve Radio Show. Who's calling?
How you doing? Okay.
Okay.
Just call.
Okay. Okay. So you're going to hold on for me. Okay. We have. Okay. I'll let you jump in a few minutes. Okay. All right. Okay. So if you could. Okay. You got it on mute. That's awesome. Okay. All right. So and before I get started, I'd like to say this before I miss it. I don't know if you guys watched the video, and it's good if you guys, a lot of guys didn't watch the video. And don't think about, let your mind travels in a direction, I would say, putting someone else in this place. And we have to look at it that way. It's hard to watch. It is, it's very, 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 very troubling. Let me say this. After the George Floyd situation, I think the police officers around the world have been trying to build up and reconstruct in such a manner to give a little more clarity to everyone, building trust with the police officers around the United States and just around the world, period. And I think they've been trying to fix, get the bad apples out the basket, weave them out, going down and reconstructing just piece by piece until we have this situation that has occurred over here recently with Tyre Nichols. I think every cop around the world scratching their heads like, here we go trying to get ourselves back with trust around the community, working hard, overtime, trying to let people know around the world there are some good cops, and the good cops overweigh the bad cops, and we plan on keeping it that way. So we have some idiot cops that won't stack the food. So anytime you act a fool in life, you're always going to pay some consequences. I would say as an African-American man, a little spice of Indian from a family, and a spice of French from a grandmother, grandmothers both sides, but you can say 90% African-American. We have a spice a little bit of everything, right? But I would like to say this. We know how that's going to happen, especially the black officers. I can see it. We know how this going in. And I know it's a lot of cops around the world going to turn their backs like, listen, we don't know what in the HEL you guys are thinking for this. But this one, you're on your own. Stand to say this is that let me go and read a scripture here. Numbers 35, 35th chapter, verse 30. It said, whosoever killeth any person, the murderer, shall be put to death by the mob of witnesses. But one witness shall not testify against any person to cause him to die. We said again, first chapter 30 verse said, whosoever killeth any person, the murderer shall be put to death by the mob of witnesses. But one witness shall not testify against any person to cause him to die. I'm going to go to the first. Moreover, ye shall take no satisfaction for the life of a murderer, which is guilty of death, but he shall be surely put to death. That's in the book. And also, too, guys, there's a rumor because this topic tonight, I had some things laid out, but it's kind of going to be a little bit roller coaster ride, maybe a little bit here and there. We found out there was a rumor going on that Tyre Nichols was actually and one of the police officers' wives, supposedly, were hanging out together or seeing each other, you could say. And I think anybody with common sense can clearly see that this was an intent. This was no random pull-up. And I'm going to tell you why in a little bit into the topic. But we'll get to that. That's a rumor now. I'm not saying it. That's in the social media. I'm just saying what's in the social media, what they're saying. I don't know. I'm just letting you know. But I will say that that's why I said why way before I heard about this today. With my own eyes, I can see it's something else going on. It's not my opinion. I would say it's something more going on more than that. I'm not going to say what it is, but I feel like something else is going on. Tyree DeAndre Nichols, June 1st, 1993, January 10th, 2023. That was the beginning and that was the end. During that time, let's say, was a 29-year-old African-American man with a 4-year-old son. At the time of his death, he worked for FedEx and was an aspiring photographer. Okay, Nicholas was raised in Sacramento, California, and moved to Memphis, Tennessee in 2020. Okay, so the incident that reignited long simmering tensions over a fatal police encounter with a black man, starting with Nichols, 29 years old, was pulled over on the night of January 7th for allegedly reckless driving. Allegedly reckless driving, according to the Memphis Police Department. That was supposedly the claim of the situation with Tyree Nichols. And of course, we all know that we just have our speculation. We kind of see that that's a little bit more into the story. But during Tyree Nichols' arrest, by the way, which was totally wrong, the way I see it, was handcuffed. He was hit with a bully club across his head. Bully club is like a steel, pretty much pipe. Police officer was just taking back, trying to find a good angle to hit him, and just hit him in the face. And also, too, I like to say this before. No, but I said, I'm going to finish this. He was hit in the head with a bully club. He was pepper sprayed, soccer kicked to the head, then stood up and was punched in his face over 5 times or more. And I said, thanks for the photographer. That's how things happen, right? So Tyree Nichols was a photographer, and you got someone that's video for him. But I'm quite sure from God above, when they punched him up several times, they had knocked him out, that he didn't realize and feel the punches no more. By the way, for your non-believers, that actually happens. But just saying. So I'm going to go over here to my next from my paperwork. Okay. Officers actually go through training, intense training, but these particular officers totally abuse their training. Just totally threw it out the way. At the end of the day, even going through this topic before, and I'm going to say it again 1,000 times to the topic, but the saying that these Tyree Nichols was a hit. They knew exactly who they wanted. This was planned. And they knew what they wanted to do. Tyree Nichols was out to be hit. He was on a hit list. Period. In November 2021, okay, 40 officers split into 4 teams who patrolled high crime hotspots throughout the city was called the Scorpion Unit. The Scorpion Unit. It was set up to investigate high crimes as a Scorpion Unit. Rumors go to say that also too the Scorpion unit was so corrupt, in a sense, that it was time for it to be dismantled. They had to break it up. It took Tyrese Nichols' situation to actually bring it to fruition. And that's what happened. It was grand because of 5 to 7 officers also too charged in the death of Tyrese Nichols. Acronym stood for street crimes, operations to restore peace in our neighborhoods. Now that was what, that's the acronym for it now, for the so-called Scorpion team they had going on, right? It was called saying specifically for street crimes, operation to restore peace in our neighborhoods. Let me go to something right quick. In the situation I'm looking at, the when I was looking at the situation with Tyrese Nichols, they pulled up on him. When they pulled up on Tyrese Nichols, they just yanked him right out the car. In the police training, I don't think in this day and time that they're out there doing such a thing. I don't, and I'm going to give you some details why I don't think they would do that. So aggressive, so intentional, I don't see that happening the way it actually unfolded. Tyrese Nichols, sitting at the stoplight, pulled out the car. Then you have one officer, which is the sixth officer, I believe, that was actually telling him to stomp him to the ground. More or less in some other words with that, but actually has a taser on his leg. But all of a sudden, it seemed as if to me like that was provoking and promoting him to actually run to a different location, because the location where he was at, there was a little bit too many people out there in that area. That's what it seems to me. So they're actually just kind of provoking him to run to a different area. All of a sudden, he gets up. Now, you have four officers at the time. You can't even pull him down, right? And those officers were like twice the size of Tyrese Nichols. Somehow, he gets up. We know he got up. He gets up, and all of a sudden, he ends up running to a different location toward his home, out to a quieter area. Was not that many people can actually be watching, but actually he went to the right area. At the end of the day, Tyrese Nichols, he was in the area that God wanted him to be in. So at the end of the day, we have to live in God's hand. Maybe the video wouldn't have been shown if he'd have stayed where he was at. We don't know that. All we can do is keep praying for his family and living in God's hand. At the end of the day, God made all decisions. He knows. We don't know. But I know, I believe that he was trying to get home. And home is home. That's where he was going. He was going home. So, sad to say this, let me go and say why, in my opinion, why Tyrese Nichols shouldn't been approached the way these officers approached him, by run up on the car, pulling them over, running by the car, yanking them out the car. They knew who they were going after. This was pre-planned. In Washington Post, police officers are shot and killed yearly. Okay? They shot and killed yearly, police officers. You all know this. Memorial Fund stated that 48 police officers lost their lives to gun-related incidents. Thanks for calling Stevenson Radio Show. Let me read this for a minute. Lost their lives to gun-related incidents. In 2020, which was a decline of 6%, when you compare it to 51 police officers being shot and killed in 2019, out of the 48 fatality shot officers that have been shot, okay? 11 fatalities included officers intensifying suspiciously, okay? Activity on people, 11 fatalities because of suspicious activity that's going on. They're trying to see what's going on. They're police officers. They can, that's their job, right? And on top of that, you have seven officers were killed in responding to calls for domestic disturbances. Thanks for calling the Student Action Radio Show. Who's calling?
Gibson Westbrook.
Who's calling? Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, this is Pianki. How you doing? Your name is Anderson, right?
Yeah, this name is Anderson. Yes, it is. How you doing tonight?
Yeah, Anderson.
I'm asking you, how you doing tonight? How's your night going?
I'm going fine so far.
Okay. So what's your opinion on why you think Tyree Nichols beaten to death by 5 to 7 police officers? What's your opinion on that?
Well, when the police initially pull up behind you and turn the lights on, mm-hmm. and you pull over, they spend about a minute or so running your plate on a computer.
Yes, sir.
Okay, then the officer get out, and he comes up to you and asks you for 3 things: license, registration, and proof of financial responsibility if the state requires that. Then he goes back to the car and writes out the citation. Now, if you lead them in a high-speed chase, which is a felony, when they do apprehend you, they're going to snatch you out and handcuff you. Okay, those 2 things.
Okay.
Now, this third thing, hang on for a second, this third thing, which happened
is something going on there. Okay, go ahead.
It's something going on with Nichols and one of those police officers. But when they put him on the ground, I'm sorry the man lost his life. When they put him on the ground, he should have complied and put his hands behind his back and been handcuffed. If whatever went on after that point, you should have took it to court. But when you jump up and bolt and run, it's a whole different game. Because running from the police in the state of Tennessee is a felony. Now, when they caught him, should they have beat the hell out of him? Well, I got an answer for that, too.
Okay. Well, hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second.
You got one ethnic group.
Well, hold on 1 second. Let me say something. Let me speak. Okay. I don't know who's in the background noise, but could you please stop that?
It ain't me.
I know it's not you, sir. I'm not talking to you because it's.
I'm sorry.
Right.
I was
so let me say this. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. So let me say this. First of all, they said the police, it was a high-speed chase, right? They said for reckless driving. So reckless driving, and they said high-speed chase. That's 2 different things, number one. This is my opinion. Number two, you said that I do agree with you because I didn't just say reckless driving. I didn't get the point there was a high-speed chase. But I do agree with you. You are a high-speed chase. They will yank you out the car. I totally agree with that. I totally agree. But number two,
I didn't say it was a high-speed chase with him.
You said
I say that's one example.
Okay. Right.
Why
right.
they
well,
would
on,
snatch
me,
you
me,
out.
Oh, no, I totally agree. Let me speak now. So when, and I think everybody on this panel agreed to what you're saying. When I was taught as a young boy in the south of Louisiana, of all roughness, I was told to, when a cop pull up on you, you're supposed to obey the officer, period. If a cop tell you to jump on top of the car, you jump on top of the car. If he tell you to sit down, you sit down. So what you're saying to me, I totally agree with you. Now, on that standpoint, when he got up and run, let me tell you how we thought the person was running back at home, back in the day. You run for the cop, you better be running. If you run knowing that anything can happen after you take off running. That's why I grew up as a little boy, right? But I never run for no cop, not I can recall. But I totally agree with what you're saying. If you have to obey the commands of the officer. But in my perspective of certain things that was there, you have 4 or 5 officers around. You haven't seen them in 3. And you're getting all these different commands. it's going to be a little interference, but I understand what you're saying. But go ahead. I just want to make that clear.
Well, yeah,
ahead.
You're right. Now, listen, I said high-speed chase, when they're chasing after you, you're at that point a felon. When they catch you or stop you or get baby where they can get a control of you, they will put you in detainer with handcuffs. Now, parents supposed to teach their children what to do.
Yes, sir.
Automatically. And one of the things that you automatically do when they say put your hands behind your back. Simple. Right off the bat.
I don't disagree with it.
And young people today have a lack of authority. They have a lack of authority, mm-hmm. respect for authority at home, at school, and it interacts out in the public with the police. Now, let me tell you what I think, and I've heard. Someone says that he was messing with one of those cops' girlfriend.
Hmm.
That's what I got to say. Well, that's why he snatched them out the car. That's why he was running. This man said he's going to kick his butt. And, you know, people say we want to have our own black police, our own black police chief, our own black mayor, and we want black police because they know the culture of the people that they're dealing with. Well, I'd be damned. When I was coming up, people say that, well, you remember how if you was a kid and you was walking down and Miss Sally heard you cursing, Miss Sally going to come off that porch and whoop your butt. That's the culture of the people.
That's true.
That's the culture. You get your butt whooped when you do something wrong. They ain't say they kill you, but you get your butt whooped when you do something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it.
I fully agree. Like I said, listen, I tell people I've been blessed to travel around the world. I mean, travel around different areas and meet some fantastic people. And I agree, but I grew up in the South. I grew up in Louisiana, and you want? I agree with you.
I'm down here in Louisiana right now.
But there you go. So we were taught at the table as little boys, when a police officer stops you, you stop and you obey his commands or her commands. If the police officer get out, he said, first of all, leave your hands on the steering wheel. Police, get out the car.
Turn the lights on the inside.
Yes, sir.
Let the windows down.
Yes, sir. Yes, I agree. But unfortunately, I understand that today, the youngest generation, I would say 40 and back. Is that fair enough to say 40 years old and back? I would say 40 years old and back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 40 years
now,
old and
back.
Now,
let me say something else, too.
15. All right, go ahead.
Let me say something else, too, Mr. Anderson. Black males make up 60% of the population. 6%. About half of their 13%. Why you got so much violence from black males in the country? I ain't talking about everybody, but when you identify the color of the skin, when you look at the violence, either through others or themselves, you got this violence. Where in the heck is that coming from? I mean, we got to admit it. See, it's two things. If you go to the hospital tomorrow or the doctor and the doctor tell you, Mr. Anderson, you got high blood pressure, you got possibility prostate cancer, are you going to argue with him? You're going to take that data that you're going to do what you can in order to correct those problems in order to save your life. So the data says what I just got through saying. Black males are some of the most violent in the United States percentage-wise based on their population. Now, the question is, in order to analyze this data, this evaluation, why is this? And what can
single
be
mothers.
Done to turn it around?
Single mothers. And I can say that because I was a single mother. And unfortunately, most single mothers who are raising sons by themselves, if the grandfather is not involved, or if there's not uncles involved, if the dad is not a responsible dad and going to come and be involved, it's single mothers. And I can say that honestly, I'm telling you what I know, not what I heard. I'm a single mother, My son was raised in Los Angeles. I taught school at LA Unified School District. I worked for Dallas Independent School District, single mothers. And I'm not saying you don't get it where there are double parents, but it's, the behavior is much better where there is a father or uncles. Like my son had my brothers, they would get in that booty, Judy. But if there's no uncles or man involved, it's single mothers who are trying to work to take care of the son. Mine was the only son, but some of the young ladies may have two or three different kids and stuff. So it's basically no dad or no male figure around.
You
got to
have a functional family.
Right.
You got to have
exactly.
You got to have mother, father,
that's right.
And children,
that's
and
right.
You got to have, guess this, real grandparents. It ain't no 35-year-old
right.
grandparents.
Nope.
I'm not saying that. No,
my grandson.
I agree.
Yeah. My latest grandson, and he lost his father when he was two. So guess what? Then I take over.
Right.
His mama is my daughter. I've heard him say, I used to make him do 100 math problems every day. And I used to take him out and play baseball. I hit him 100 ground balls. If he gets to number 88 and miss, guess what? He start all over. So one time he went to his mama. Mama, Papa's making me start all over. You know what she told him? She said, get back in there because he made me do it too.
I know that's right.
So that's the problem. And right today, my grandson is 25 years old. If he leave out this house, you know what he tell me? Papa, I'm going such and such place, and I'll be back such and such time. 25 years old. So you got to instill that type of authority. If you don't, with all the pressure out in society today and all in these hoochie mamas wearing these yoga pants and all that stuff and all the emphasis in their butts, your child, your male child, stand a chance
horse.
Of running astray.
You said, what did you say?
Butt naked
you
on a glass horse.
I know. He was saying
I say they can easily be persuaded in the wrong direction.
That's right.
And get in trouble.
That's right.
So until you reestablish these basics, and it's something that's been tried, proved, and tested amongst human beings. Ain't no certain skin, it's most human being, and it's also in the animal kingdom. You have to establish that parental responsibility, that parental structure, and it's got to be a functional community. Then you repeat it.
Right.
You go, you get married, you have kids, they get educated, then they get married. It's just repeated over and over and over again. Now, you don't have to get married, but you have to have some sort of functional authority or recognition and respect for. If not, well, you get what you got.
That's right. And we understand that because we came from that type of function. Stevie's mother was my fourth grade teacher, and she used to tap our behind in the fourth grade. We got it. We did something we had no business doing. We got our butt toe up. And then don't let your auntie or uncle, my uncle was supervisor of maintenance at the school. He's going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you get home, you're going to get it again. And don't let one of your aunties show up. You're going to get it again. And so we grew up
and
like
let me
that.
Tell you something
else. No, I'm not growing up like that.
Let me tell you something else. See, discipline a child is an art. It's not just something you read out of a book. And see, when I was coming up, I got what you call for old and for new. See, when I got a whooping, it wasn't for what I just done a half hour ago. It might have been for something I'd done 2 weeks ago, along with things between 2 weeks ago and now. That's what they call old and new.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say this.
Do you know about that old and new? Stop acting like you don't know.
Okay. Let me say something. And I'm glad you called in because your insight is – it's very,
awesome.
Very clear. It's very, very precise. I agree. And everyone on the panel, we have some people on the panel right now that's not saying anything, but they listen and they agree with it too. I had a Instagram, this gentleman, I'm going to call his name. He's he's on TV or whatnot. But I was, he asked me a question. I said, well, going back to your answer, what do we do at this point in life at the United States, in the country, period? The oversight. Now, I'm not being Democrat or Republican. This is not the type of topic. This is not the panel for that. I don't do that. I would say this because I've been a lot of friends, so-called friends, and family members and everything lost due to a lot of things with the politics. But let me say this. The oversight has to be in place. That's from the towns, the cities, the states, and the country. What's the right oversight is, right now, our oversight in the United States is off-centered. Once we start centering, to get it back to center, then we can move forward. We can move above. Once that happens, and that goes from discipline, you can discipline a kid in Texas. Kids in Texas get paddling all the way to K-12. They get paddling. And guess what? It's about embarrassment. Like, I'm going to get a paddle. Like, I'm going to get no paddle. I'm going to do what I need to do. No more work. But when the this is what happened. You have to put the right oversight in these positions. From the smaller town that we grew up in Jonesboro, Louisiana, where I'm from, the small town, the towns all Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, so you get to the larger states of Texas, Houston, Dallas, and Chicago, and the New York, and L.A. The discipline still is discipline. I don't care what mindset. I don't care what nationality. The discipline and having the right oversight.
Let me add
country.
Something to that.
No, go ahead.
Let me add something to that. You're right. You're talking about you know who controls that federal government? The states do. Federal government gets its power from the state. Federal government has no policing power. It's the state. Your congressperson, you in Texas, Sheila Jackson Lee, Sheila Jackson Lee is making and introducing legislation that's going to harm Texans. So Texas, that state legislature, that district that she's in. See, that congressional district consists of several state legislative districts. The state control her, and they need to call her back in to the carpet and say, look, you're acting a damn fool. We're going to get rid of you. Why are you introducing a bill that's going to harm Texans? Especially if I'm over in Missouri or Louisiana, I'm not having those problems. The state legislatures, according to Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, control the states, the federal government. And states don't have to listen to the federal government, nor the courts, because courts make no laws. They just give opinions based on arguments between two parties. I don't care how high up you go. They cannot make laws, and they don't make rules.
I have a question. Let me ask you
question
because
I read
an opinion that I heard him say that it was an ex-girlfriend, but I read one person said a rumor was it was one of the cops' ex-wife. That's why I was saying, okay, so the rumor is it an ex-girlfriend or ex-wife?
You got a similar thing going on in New Orleans with Cantrell, the mayor of that city. And a police officer and her husband. Right now.
Wow.
Again, that goes to you agree to me with the oversight in these positions of states and cities in the country and their laws, right? The oversight, the right people in position that's truly going to lead in the right direction. And they, like you would think, they would know better. They should have been raised right to understand what's true and what's wrong and what's equal, what's unequal, what would help. But a lot of, unfortunately, in this world of greed,
and another thing, citizens don't know their civic responsibility. You and a group supposed to address a problem that you have. If you need to be having worked out at the federal level, you're supposed to choose somebody. You're supposed to tell them what you want them to do. You're supposed to support them with funding, then vote them and send them all to Congress. They supposed to answer to you. You don't vote for a person and sit back and see what happens, like throwing marbles up in the damn air.
And you're right, and that takes us to the Rodney King incident, because this was a Rodney King incident. Unfortunately, the cops were not – they were the same color of the Rodney King. I'm just using an example because at some point let's say I'm a cop, hypothetically, I'm a cop, and it's four other female cops, and we may be the same race or different colors, but I am not going to involve myself into another kind of pettiness and lose my job, lose my livelihood, lose my life, because now they're fired and they're charged with murder and they spend some time. So each one of those five cops had to make a decision. How many cops does it take to take down one man? Did it take all five? Well, no, it didn't. And then they were high-fiving each other. I saw the video. They were high-fiving each other. So at some point, whether the situation was an ex-girlfriend or ex-wife, somebody got to think and use their brain. And since the young man is running, because we're not there, so he could be running for his life. We don't know what's being said in the conversations. We don't know what's going on. So he could be running because he has seen so many other black men look like him lose their lives right there. So he's trying to run. He could be running for freedom. We don't know. But one of those five, two of those five, three of those five should have been trying to stop the one who has the personal issue. Because I said it from the very beginning. I said this was personal. And now here we are.
Yeah,
it was
right.
Personal. So the other four mm-hmm. should have been saying, look, man, we're not getting in that. We're going to go with you. We're going to cover you. We're going to make sure don't let it happen to you. But it's between you and him, and we just don't, you know, step back. We ain't going to let nothing crazy happen, but don't go crazy. So you got another what was it, Chavin? You got another Chavin incident. This is basically another Chavin incident, but it's like, so you're going to go out there and lose your livelihood and your life for this idiot, because that's basically what he is, an idiot. And now you got five idiots. Well, you could have just had one.
I'm going to let you go ahead and answer that question, and then after that I have a question to you, but going back to the black man.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
See, this is not no easy situation. It's a multiplicity of problems. One thing, why you got to have three of those details specializing in that particular type of criminality in a community? Well, that's because you got to go back again. It's the citizen. Ain't nothing wrong with the police typically. It's the people that they run into on the street. Every time they do a traffic stop, even if they follow procedure, what the hell are you stopping me for?
True.
Well, how much of that you going to, sooner or later, that's going to take its toll. Now, yeah, you're supposed to be able to let it deflect off of you, but you know you're talking about human beings. See, when criminals do a criminality, they're not just hurting the person that they're immediately affecting. It's hurting the whole neighborhood, the whole community. That community
that's
there
true.
In Memphis is mostly older, elderly black people who could not leave. Now you get these settlements, it's going to cause their taxes to go up. It's going to put an extra burden on them with whatever little they already have.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point in time, the people of age that's committing these type of horrendous things, no matter how large they are, they need to know that you just don't live for yourself. I don't go to clubs. I don't chase women. I don't have sex with just anybody. You know why? Because I'm not living just for myself. I have members of the family, kids, that depends on me. And that's when you have to start looking at it like that and do what you're supposed to do. You don't just live for yourself. The things that you do is going to affect a whole slew of people.
Very well said.
No matter what
the
color your uniform is.
I agree with you. I believe, and I would say this too. I would say you were saying a reference earlier, and I mentioned them earlier about when I go through Memphis playing, doing the qualify for the St. Jude's, right? It's a tournament, pre-qualifying and make the tour, but pre-qualifying for it. I always like going through Memphis, and you're right about the community population of the elderly in Memphis. You're right. A lot of people got left behind. They couldn't leave, right? But very, very disciplined, very, very professional people, in a sense. But you were saying earlier about, you asked me a question about the black men. Why is it that we having this problem? And I've been looking at different programs they have for certain black men here and there, and we teach them. I think, too, and go to Ms. Gibson said about the mothers, right, the single moms. I think, too, I think, and there's more single moms than ever right now with young black men. But I encourage the young black mothers to allow some of these young men to go to some of these programs to actually to educate the younger generation of black men, and even some black men of age need to go, right? Let them go to these camps, whatever camp it may be. It'd be music, it'd be art, it'd be educational camps, reading camps, after-school programs. These are the things that my mom and dad actually had us doing. We went to camp every year. I went to reading, and I had to go into I went to I did that a couple of years when I was growing up, so different camps. So this is what's lacking, and I agree with you. I feel that, you know, I tell people, I would say, I tell people sometimes a lack of education and understanding, and you know as I know, when you get caught up in that five-state area, you don't leave to see anything further in life, educational-wise, mentally, different nationalities of people, different languages. You get stuck in a rut. You stuck in that rut. Mm-hmm. You can't get out of it. And a lot of times mm-hmm. that it goes back to the, in the sense of the Django attitude, a young our black man. And I'm just being, that's just the way it is. That's why I've seen it. And I've had the opportunity to get to travel and move around. And see, when I go home, I still, I love my little town. I go home. And, but unfortunately, you get some people, certain areas, they just, you don't know. You don't know. It's come with fear.
Well, with you're fear, right. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How do mm-hmm. a young lady know what to look for in a husband if she never witnessed it between a mother and a father? She don't know.
Hello.
You don't
hello,
know.
Hello, hello.
You go out there and you make mistakes, then all of a sudden you're coming back to the house with trash bags full of clothes and dragging kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's dysfunction.
All the day long. Four and five kids, and all four and five kids got five and a half daddies because you don't know really who one of the daddies is.
Now,
I mean, seriously.
is that an indictment for fair? You know, woman, don't be too proud to beg for somebody to help you with your boys.
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
I guarantee you, when that boy start getting around 12, 13, and 14, you're
mm-hmm.
not going to be able to handle him.
Mm-mm.
You're not going to be able to handle him.
Hold on one
mm-mm.
second.
And
hello.
There's all
I
sorts
have
of resources
hold on
out there
second
to address the
wait,
situation
hold on,
you're in.
Hold on one second. No, I'm just for you too, Ms. Gibson. I want everybody to be on hold uh-huh. because I want him to say what he has to say. I want him to speak what he has to say and
okay.
not be interrupted.
Okay.
You can go ahead again. Sorry about
no,
that.
No, what
go
I
ahead.
Said is that I'm telling these mothers, we know whatever the problem that led to you being in the situation you is now, but if you got a young man, you got to seek help for him. Don't be too
mm-hmm.
ashamed to beg for help if you have to, because when that boy gets to be about 12, 13, you're not going to be able to handle it. I'm telling you, the streets are going to
mm-hmm.
take over.
That's right.
And I feel sorry for mothers have to come upon a scene that's taped off with yellow tape and they break down crying. That just hurts
mm-hmm.
me.
Oh, you think it don't hurt the mother? I've been there. My son was murdered with two 11-year-old boys, so I know that feeling all too well. But the when my son became 13, I literally had to seek counseling. And just so happened, one of my friends at Crenshaw High School, she was a counselor, and she was counseling the teenagers who were on drugs or alcohol or whatever. But she gave me some free time for my son and me because I said, I can't afford it and stuff. And so anyway, when I started going to counseling with her, I learned that she said he's 13. And the problem is because she met with him and then she met with me and then she met with both of us. She said, you still want him to be this little boy, but he is growing up to be a man, she said, and you're going to have to let him spend that time. So I called my brother, who is now retired from the Navy, who was just right down the road in San Diego, and I said, hey, blah, 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 blah. My brother said, no problem. He was on the road. He got there. He had the you can go to military camp, partner, blah, blah, blah. I didn't interfere with it no more. And it was good.
Hold on one second.
I was in a barbershop one time. This is real quick. I was in a barbershop one time. We was talking. All of a sudden, the door opened. And in stepped a black woman. And she came in. She was crying. And she said, can some of you help me with my son? I'm scared I'm going to lose him to the street.
Wow.
Go ahead, sir.
It's so true. Like I said, I was blessed. I always talk about it by having my neighbors was an example, as well as my having the parents with the work ethic, but also to my uncles and my aunts. If there was a situation at home, I could always talk to my aunt or my uncle, like you said earlier. And my parents didn't interfere with me talking to my uncle or my aunt, and I still do today. And that's another thing, too, like you said, a lot of parents want to get in and they want to play defense instead of let your kid play offense for knowledge and to understanding. But hold on one second. Thanks for calling Stewart's Radio Show. Who's calling?
Hi, my name is Sarge. How you doing?
Fine. How you doing, Sarge? Thanks for calling into the radio show. We have a couple of people, a couple of awesome panel right now tonight on just listening, hanging back. But what are your thoughts about this topic? Tyree Nichols beaten to death by 5 to 7 police officers now, I think 7, and we haven't gotten to the point talking about the paramedics, but also, too, just the, we've been talking about the disciplinary of how we would discipline.
Thank you for taking my call, and I'd like to preface my comments by saying I'm speaking as a 23-year retired police officer, was a use of force and certified firearms instructor, and I am certain that any sensate being making the most cursory examination of this case will agree that an egregious wrong has been done by these 5 police officers. I have rarely beheld a more horrid application of police tactics and procedure and a complete disregard for the rights and due process custodial care due a detained and arrested subject. Now, having said that, I think there's something that is at least as important and perhaps even more important to be examined that is yet to be examined in any great depth, and that is the seeming lack of accountability for the command structure and supervision of the Memphis Police Department, beginning with the pandering, once fired, then reinstated, former Atlanta police official, and her inappropriate, possibly due process jeopardizing statements where she entreated us to, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think I'm pretty accurate here, feel what the Nichols family is feeling, unquote. Now,
right.
You know, now look, now, you have this many cops and personnel from other jurisdictions, the Sheriff's Department and paramedics appearing on a scene, and not a single supervisor showed up at either the traffic stop initially or the subsequent criminal actions in the second incident where they got the suspect cornered and detained and captured. Not one supervisor showed up. And now remember now, this SCORPION unit, which stands for Street Crime Organized Operations, Restoring Peace in Our Neighborhood. That's what SCORPION stands for. And that outfit was the brainchild of Chief Fields, or at least it came into being under her aegis when she took the job as chief. Now, also, one of the police officers hired, who has been one of the ones doing most of the beating, was a former corrections officer who had been sued for excessive use of force. And the case had not been resolved either by acquittal or by him finding guilty of some violation. It was a civil case, not a criminal case. Yet and still, with this hanging over his head, the Memphis Police Department chose to hire him. Now, I have heard, and I think it will come out in the following days, that the reason he's hired is because they are so desperate to get police officers in Memphis, they are dropping the standards beyond all reasonable recognition in order to get the number of officers they need. Now,
wow.
You heard what I said a little bit earlier about the police chief and what I feel is a responsibility,
right.
Direct responsibility as a commanding officer
right.
of that department to ensure that proper training standards and supervision was adhered to. Now, if, and I say if, she had been complaining to the city council about lack of funding to hire more supervisors, to get promotion tests, to get them promoted to supervisors so you have more supervisors in the field and more money for training, and she kept saying it over and over again in the city where council wasn't acting, well, I'm not going to fault her. But if she wasn't doing that, then she bears, like a good commanding officer should, whether it's in the armed forces or the police department, she should bear the primary responsibility for this cock-up by her officers. And it doesn't appear that she wants to do it. She wants to pander. She wants to skate and evade her responsibility. And someone needs to hold her accountable, along with the mayor and the city council. And the entire command
but
structure
you know what?
Above the ranks of those officers, every one of them should be held accountable.
You know what, caller? Now, I think I heard you make mention that the number of cases that squad had worked on, in other words, that squad just did not form the week before. They've been there for quite some time and never demonstrated at least this extent of grievous action.
It's over 2 years' worth.
Yeah, it's
now, listen to this. I want y'all to listen to this. That's why something else is going on.
Yep.
Oh, no,
they didn't just
started.
Start last week. They didn't just not start the week before. That's at the time when you have these type of mistakes and violations because they fresh at the job. These people have been around for over 2 years, and they have done hundreds of instances where they had to apprehend and bring in criminals. That's why something else is going on.
But he said it. He said the person in charge is not taking responsibility. She didn't even show up.
No,
well,
not only did she show up, but when
charge,
she gave her public statements, her public statements were, I believe, engendered to deflect responsibility away from her and put the complete onus on these rogue police officers. And I think that's abominable for a responsible commander to behave that way. And another thing about this unit, from October 2021 until January 2022, the unit made 566 arrests. They also seized $100,000 in cash from drug dealers and other suspects, 270 vehicles that were engaged in some sort of illegal conduct, either drug dealing or reckless driving or drag racing or whatever, and 353 weapons of various sorts. Now, I am not going to say I know of the quality of those arrests, okay? I'm not saying every one of them was a bona fide, good arrest, that because I don't know, because I haven't examined them. But I think it's safe to say that a significant number, if not the majority of them, were legit arrests that did the job that the unit was formed for to eliminate major crime in a really bad hot spot in Memphis. Now, if that is true, I'm trying to understand why you would disband an effective unit simply because of the actions of five rogue police officers. I think this
right.
is, again, another attempt to deflect responsibility. And I don't like it one bit.
Wow.
I don't disagree with you at all on that. And that's my... When I said why, I know in my heart, like you're saying, in a sense that there's other things going on that we don't know about. And like you say, only $100,000 within 2021 to 2023, that's it? No, it's been more money seized than that. That's all the money that's showing up. but no, I totally agree with what you're saying. I totally agree. If something else is going on. I think we all on the panel will agree with that. Even the gentleman earlier that's on right now, he said the same thing, similar. That he totally feel that that's, like you say, that's another deflection. Like, okay, it's not my responsibility. Yeah, it's your responsibility. You're supposed to be the chief. You should be able to organize and see what's going on. But that's one bad apple, hell,
right.
You see things not going right, take care of it. And
right.
Unfortunately, that's what I said earlier before you called in. I was talking earlier, the oversight. A lot of oversight that's in place in certain areas, especially around this country, they're not in the right position to handle that oversight. But go ahead, guys.
Oh, I have no doubt that there was a justification for this unit in this particular area because crime in Memphis is off the chain. In this particular area they were working in, it was really a bad. So I'm not doubting the justification for the unit. What I am really struck by is the amazing lack of conversation about the command structure's responsibility for the actions of their officers. It's as though they're completely disassociated from it. We don't know where they came from. They just wound up in Memphis Police Department uniform. And remember, this unit was founded after she became the chief, whether she initiated it and suggested it or whether it just happened to be something that was on the books and just happened to come up during her tenure and she approved it. Nonetheless, she is responsible for their performance, primarily.
That's right.
But
you
know what? But those officers has been doing that for quite some time. They never have had no incident where they beat somebody to death, quote unquote. It's just like a pilot. You got a pilot that's been flying for 2 years, making perfect landings, and all of a sudden, the last couple of weeks, he's been trying to land the plane upside down. So it's something going on with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's something going on with these cops. And this whole idea about estranged love affairs has to be taken into account because we're starting to hear these stories now.
And you know what really bothers me? I mean, this bothers me a lot. Now, as the brother Carla was saying, now we're hearing all this yak about federal legislation for police reform. Now, let me explain something to you. And I'm sure you guys know this already, but if you don't and your listeners don't know this, I'm going to let them all know this. The responsibility for non-federal crime rests entirely with state jurisdictions. State and local jurisdictions. The federal government has no role other than to ensure that civil rights are not violated. If there is a civil rights violation under color of authority of law, then that's the only thing the federal government has jurisdiction. The federal government should have no say-so in how they are trained, no say-so, and I believe I'm an advocate of training because that's what I did for much of my career. I believe in hard training. Hard training saves blood and prevents lawsuits. I believe in it absolutely. I'm a devotee, an advocate for hard training. But the federal government has no say-so in how they're trained or how they're equipped or how they structure themselves. They should hands off. If there's no federal law to which they should be, they have no constitutional authority to intervene, none whatsoever. And I don't want them to get involved because we don't need a federal police force or anything acting under the rubric of a federal police force.
Absolutely right. They have nothing to say. The only thing they can do.
The first caller said, he said the same thing, right? Didn't you say that about it shouldn't be?
I said the same thing.
The
only thing the federal government, the only thing the federal government can do is come in and investigate civil rights violations. Then they can look at things. And they can do what's called a consent decree. The 1965 Civil Rights Act, which had to do with registration, not voting, was a consent decree. Other words, it was an agreement to participate, but it was not binding. They didn't have to do it. They agreed to participate.
And by the way, I'm absolutely for the federal government through the National Institute of Justice, since it does exist, making recommendations to local jurisdictions. After all, mostly every local jurisdiction has adopted what is known as the use of force continuum, which was promulgated by the National Institute of Justice. I've taught it in its parameters and its applications innumerable times. I've done innumerable lesson plans dealing with the use of force continuum generated by the National Institute of Justice. That is entirely appropriate for the federal government to do, to advise them of what we have learned, what we have determined, what we would suggest to you that you adopt. Great. Federal government, great. Spending our tax money on that, why not? But the federal government, again, I want to emphasize, no jurisdiction whatsoever in local law enforcement. Under the federalist system of the United States Constitution, that is entirely a matter for state and local jurisdiction.
Unless it's a federal crime like murder and messing with kids. Those are federal crimes.
That's correct.
You're right, sir.
Or something that has to do with interstate commerce or something like that, or kidnapping, which has been adopted through interstate law, interstate commerce, interstate kidnapping, things like that. Yes, federal government's got jurisdiction there. But other than that, no, no. And I don't even want them to even talk like they do. And if they do, they better tell me. First thing out of their mouths I want to hear is, what is your constitutional authority to pass this law? Under what aspect of the Constitution are you passing this law?
And you know another thing, too, and since we talk about education, FBI or IRS come up to your door and say, you ask them who they are, and you say, I ain't got nothing to say. Because they don't have the authority to do that. They have to come with a sheriff who's elected and have territorial.
Mm-hmm.
They have territorial authorization over that area that they're in.
Do you realize
FBI
that
is supposed to come to your house knocking on no damn door? And I tell you something else.
When I had a hot suit from my state into another state, and I called the other jurisdiction for help in the pursuit, and they got the guy arrested and had him in custody because they would take the lead in the pursuit. We'd pull the guy over. We'd arrest him, get him out of his car, arrest him. They'd take him to the local jail, and I had to go before a judge the next day for them to extradite him back to Illinois. Even though it was a hot pursuit, I couldn't just put him in my car and take him back across the border to Illinois. I had to wait for a judge there to approve that his extradition is released to me or to our state's custody. That's how it is. Everybody has jurisdiction. You're supposed to observe jurisdictional boundaries.
So I have a question, sir. I have a question for you. You you said you retired from the force, correct?
Oh yeah, I'm happy to be. There's no way under God's green earth, under these present circumstances, to be a police officer I would ever become one. It was different when I joined the force. I don't mind the danger. I don't mind the risks. I'm willing to accept all that. But this atmosphere now, which is almost insane, that they're putting police officers through, this inverted, crazy, woke, insane, lunatic nonsense, there's no way in God's green earth I'd ever become a police officer in this environment today. Ever.
So do you feel that they charged these officers too quickly?
It seemed like it was quick. Maybe given the egregious nature of what they did, I understand the pressure. But it certainly is warp speed for a grand jury indictment. Now, I guess they did it on a grand jury presentment, meaning they went to an already existing grand jury and asked them to consider this case as a priority, and they came down with a grand jury indictment real quick. I could see how it could happen, but it is a little bit unusual for it to happen this rapidly, I will admit. But I'm not going to out of hand dismiss it as being too quick, but it is certainly a bit anomalous, I got to admit. It's really quick. This is like warp speed to get an indictment. This happened January 7th, and they arrested these guys on, what, the 21st, the 22nd, the 23rd?
Mm-hmm.
That's really quick.
Yeah, it is.
But that's something
did
like
you serve
said
in the military? Was he still there?
I mean, they didn't have to convene a special grand jury, which would have taken more time. I'm sure they went to one that was already in existence and already considering other matters, so they were able to get the indictment pretty quick, I would guess.
Okay. Okay. Yes,
let me ask you a question. You said that you would, in the situation that was going on with the police officers, I see that right now it's 70% has risen. Last year from police officers that's actually leaving the police officer jobs. They're leaving the job. They don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. So
yeah,
you're saying that just because of the fact is just you feel that you guys are not able to do your job. What's the problem with that? Why you think? I understand
clearly. I mean, the relative mass exodus from the police force of all these veteran officers who have dedicated much of their lives to this job. And I really did, even though, look, police work is often boring. It's repetitious. You got to put up with politics. You got crazy supervisors sometimes you got to work for, especially your political masters, the non-sworn people who are your political masters. They're maddening. Despite that, I got pride from doing the job properly and with, a due regard for people's constitutional rights. In the face of the dangerous situations I did, I felt, in my mind, with honor and most of the people I work with. But the reason cops are leaving today is because now we have an atmosphere that is actively hostile to the police when they do their jobs properly. Like what happened with Officer Wilson and the hands up, don't shoot stuff? That was unforgivable. What they did with that, what they did with Ferguson, it was literally unforgivable. Every single fact and circumstance in that case has borne out by the Department of Justice's own investigation. Barack Obama's own Department of Justification did a report that sounded as though it was written by Officer Wilson's defense lawyers. Despite that, you had all these people chanting mindlessly over and over again, hands up, don't shoot, hands up, don't shoot, and nothing in either the forensic examination or the eyewitnesses, of which there were like 24, there were dozens of them, all of them confirmed and corroborated Officer Wilson's version of events. Despite that, they did everything they could do to legally lynch that man. And he's not the only one, and we've been seeing cases like that ever since, coming out regularly. You get the civil rights racial industrial complex lawyers coming out trying to vilify the officers when they do their jobs properly, legally, constitutionally, ethically, and morally, because they have to use force, and force has already been dictated to us by the decision of the Supreme Court in Tennessee versus Garner. I'm talking about deadly force. Tennessee versus Garner, Graham versus Connor. I'm talking about they do all of it in accordance not only with those decisions, but in accordance with the state constitution and the state regulations and laws on the use of deadly force and the application of force in general. Despite that, they will leave no stone unturned to try to condemn the officers who have to do it. It's a disgrace.
Wow.
Yeah, especially if they're white. That's the thing with this case. You know, people just looked at the headlines. Oh, yeah, but when they found out the officers were black, then they had to come up with another narrative. You know what that is? Mm-hmm. Well, they trained under white supremacy.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that is really fascinating to listen to. They have literally come up with an infallible proposition. And that infallible proposition, originally it was that, well, white cops are inherently racist whether they know it or not. They're unconsciously racist. They are imbued with white supremacy by virtue of their very birth. And they are simply incapable of objectively applying the law to black people. Well, now you see in the Memphis case, they have an infallible proposition. Now they say even if you're black and you're doing the law, by virtue of it being suffused and saturated with white supremacy, you are inescapably unable to not internalize the white supremacy and racism inherent in the application of the law. They can't lose. They can't lose. I mean, they literally can say this stuff and they can't lose. It is just amazing the way they have inverted reality and rational thought itself, especially to apply these elements of critical race theory, which is a legal theory which holds that to objectively apply the law to black people is inherently racist because the United States is so racist from its founding in the creation of its law and its institutions. And if you objectively, meaning without prejudice or favor, apply the law to white people as you're supposed to anyone, that in and of itself is a racist action. It's amazing that anybody could even get away with making this as a credible theory, yet and still we've got lunatics and state governments all over the place adopting this nonsense. Oh, let's not forget the federal government. It's crazy.
Well, look, you got a few minutes left, and I'm going to give solutions. I don't like this harp on identifiable problem. But as far as young people is concerned, your kids, you have to educate your children to the highest degree as possible. And start off young. Have your child evaluated, assessed, the same way you do when they go to a football combine or a basketball camp, where they see how fast they can run, how far they can throw, and how high they can jump. You do the same thing with that child when they're young, because every child is different. They are born with certain innate abilities, and you have to exploit those abilities and provide them with the necessary resources and exposures. And don't stop and look at things that's going to put them in positions where they will be able to earn a living and take care of themselves. They may want to be a business person, but they have to be able to read. They have to be able to do math. Math is a language. Expose your child to those things. Always have something for them to do. Don't let your child grow up wanting to be a LeBron James or a Kobe Bryant. That has to be well balanced. And if they don't perform in the classroom, they cannot be on the field. Because that's not no guarantee.
Well,
so
you know,
no,
I can
make
say
sure
this.
Your child
now,
is educated.
I agree we need to be looking for solutions to this. But right now I'm kind of at a loss to solutions when you can't even agree on what objective truth is. But I'll say this. This is what I am certain of. Right now, there are hundreds and thousands of black people who are alive today, particularly black people, but there's going to be others too. But there are hundreds and thousands of black people who are alive today who in the coming weeks and months will be dead as a result of this pullback in policing that will be inevitable in the wake of this Memphis thing, just like it was in the wake of George Floyd. They're going to be, we've got at least conservatively estimated 3,200 or so excess deaths that probably would not have occurred pre-George Floyd. This thing, I don't know if it's going to be that high, but I'm certain it's going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of extra dead, mainly black people, as a result of the police depolicing and pulling back and not going after these recidivists who do these violent crimes. Of this, I am certain to a moral certainty.
Wow.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I, before you called in, we were explaining to us how we were brought up about the disciplinary and respect for officers, period. Even today, I get pulled over if that happens. I'm going to keep my hands on the steering wheel. Officer, your boy's commands. That's what you do. Now, and the thing is that unfortunately we had the incident here and recently here in Memphis that tarnished very, very badly for a police officer. That's what I said before we got started. There's a lot of great and good police officers out there. Police officers with families, kids, and they out there right now putting their lives on the lines for some idiots, people that's out there in the world today. I sometimes driving the golf course, sometimes I say, look at that fool. Like, what are they thinking about? This is just totally out of control. I don't understand it. I don't know what's in the water, but it is different today. Sad to say this, what those guys did was totally, totally a disgrace for the police officers, especially after George Floyd situation, not trying to build back up the actual trust in the communities was the hard work you guys do, and that was a bad situation what happened that out there in Minnesota. But I can't thank you guys when your detailed information what you guys are sharing. Any other thoughts you want to talk about?
Yeah, but the one thing you got to realize, though, again, I'm going back to administrative procedures and administrative responsibility. One of these officers who got hired had a pending case of excessive use of force when he was a corrections officer, one that had not yet been resolved. And they hired him anyway. Again, because they're desperate to get somebody, and undoubtedly that diversity, equity, and inclusion nonsense comes up. A poisonous, not merit, not excellence, not aptitude. Primarily, diversity, equity, and inclusion, primary, most important value, and it's poisoning. It's going to kill everything. It is one of the most poisonous philosophies I can think of outside of Marxism and or fascism, both of which are gaining increasing inroads in every American institution in the United States today.
Mm-hmm.
She should be accountable for that, like you said. I agree. She should. And I'm quite sure they're actually untangling this at very, very fine to get to a lot of solutions. But I don't know if they're going to actually question at that point with her. But, yeah, she should actually be getting a resignation together. I totally agree with that. Because this has happened before, and there's rumors out there, too, that the Scorpion unit have had problems. But, however, you need some type of unit to keep the discipline out here today, too. Because, again, it's a very, very tough situation for the officers. But then it makes it extra tough when you have some bad apples this time that was in the basket.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, these
criminals out here.
Every time there's a hint of trouble, to disband a unit, you can do this in perpetuity, because if you expect perfection from police officers, even with the best administration, the best procedures, the best training, the best aptitude test, the best hiring criteria, even with all of that, and you expect perfection from human beings in the application of something like authoritative, like law enforcement, you just are living in a dreamland. What you got to do is you got to do everything you conscientiously can to minimize this, except the fact that in state of human affairs, human nature inevitably takes over for even the best of us, and sometimes people screw up deliberately or accidentally. And you take vigorous, relentless action to correct it, to prosecute as necessary, to punish as necessary, to fire as necessary, and you move on. You know, say every time something bad happens, we disband the unit. What if the unit is effective?
Right.
What, irredeemable?
Well, you know, nowadays,
irreformable? Can't be reformed?
So
nowadays, you got to look at it, too. These criminals will kill. They are killing police officers. You don't hear about it. And in St. Louis, you got 13-year-olds carjacking. You got a 13-year-old with his mama. A man agreed to give them a lift. The boy gets in the back, and they drive by the block, and all of a sudden he's pistol whipping the driver upside the head, and they end up taking the car. He had a 17-year-old shooting at police officers here the other day in St. Louis. 13-year-olds carjacking a woman coming home and take her car. And the 13-year-old talking to her and having a conversation like a grown man. And he said, I want to use your phone. She said, I don't have one. Then he said, well, give me your keys.
Yeah.
Well, she ended up shooting one.
Right. Under this sort of logic,
I mean, why not disband the Memphis Police Department? I mean, you got to go back to the Memphis Police Department to get more officers to replace a similar unit if you identify a similar problem. I mean, we've got to be rational. Got to stop pandering. Got to start telling the truth of why there's so much violent crime among young black males aged 17 to 34. It is the culture. The culture has been ruined. The black father has been driven out of the home. They don't understand male authority. They don't understand authority in general, specifically male authority. And Jason Whitlock, I mean, he made a brilliant comment that pretty much covers this, and nobody wants to hear it because it's so utterly politically incorrect, but it is absolutely true. It is the kind of chaos we see in the black community when young black men are governed by single black females who resent the men who abandoned them.
Come on.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Give me 20 seconds closing thoughts, because I'm going to probably end up after Super Bowl week. I'm going to bring this topic back on, but I'll be busy next week in Phoenix. But you guys, go ahead. Closing thoughts, colleague, and state your name again if you want to. If not, I know your position as a lieutenant, right? Former lieutenant, I believe lieutenant captain, right?
Oh, no, I wasn't even a supervisor. I was in fact, I turned down being a supervisor. I wanted to stay on the special reaction team, and I wanted to stay as a firearms instructor because that was my forte.
Okay. Well, give me 20 seconds closing thoughts, please.
I think that all of these issues have to be looked at, and we can't make scapegoats out of rogue police officers who are involved in an open and shut case that will no doubt result in some form of adjudication saying that they're guilty. We got to look at the structure and the command responsibilities and the dysfunctional nature of many of these politicians who appoint these people to these positions.
Awesome. Brilliant. Brilliant. Like I said, I'm going to come back on after Super Bowl, so in 2 weeks from now, because there's so much that we haven't covered yet. And the topic, hope you guys can join again. We'll come back on the show. I'll post it after the week of Super Bowl. And thanks again for calling in. Thank you so much. Next, sir, you would like to go ahead and some closing thoughts?
I think he may have hung up already.
I guess, let me see.
He might have hung up already.
He probably hung up.
Yeah, they did. They did. We need them two back.
Yeah. Scotty, you have been closing thoughts? Scotty, you have been closing thoughts?
Is he still there?
I don't think he's on.
I'm in awe. I mean, because they basically were saying what needed to be said. I'm just, you know, I just added my little 2 cents being a single mom raising a son, but yeah. I think they definitely should be brought back, especially the ones.
Yeah, hold on one second. I think one was accidentally cut off again. I think some accidentally cut off. We still have like 2 minutes. You can finish your closing thoughts. Go ahead.
Hello? I think it's
all right.
Hello, are you there, sir?
Okay.
Heard you said that you're gonna do it again after the Super Bowl. You're gonna be doing it again because I share it everywhere. I share it everywhere.
Any
so.
Closing thoughts,
we'll
Gibson?
Well, I just basically with
like
United, I just think that you should definitely do it again. I mean, those are my closing thoughts.
Yeah, we're gonna go ahead and if you guys still listen, we're gonna go ahead and do it again after. Bring it back because it's still I have so much to cover we haven't covered yet. So we'll post it
after.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
It's a great topic. You and Miss Gibson, y'all need to run for something, man. Somebody got to make a change. We need to bring that topic back.
Miss Gibson,
and then we're gonna.
Miss Gibson, they're trying to.
We need to do Ed Reed after that or after the Super Bowl too. But that topic there you got it's not time run out, but sometimes you need another 2-3 times in it. But
I want to bring both of them back. They can come back. So that'd be good thing come back and anyone else can come in early and we'll stretch it out a little longer. Scotty, you got 10 seconds. I mean 20 seconds. Any closing thoughts or you good to go? See you next year.
Well, the closing thoughts, somebody got to straighten it out. And I want to get on that Ed Reed topic with Bethune-Cookman, but that's about it. Somebody got to straighten it out.
All right.
Yeah, I like that.
Scott Anderson.
Okay.
Let's straighten it out. You heard everybody heard that song.
I'm going to get both of you guys up right
it's
now.
It's going to hurt the kids.
All right.
It's going to hurt the kids if you don't.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Scott. Thank you so much.
All right.
Ms. Gibson, you got 10 seconds.
I said, Scotty repeated it. It needs to be done again. I agree.
Okay. Thank
I
you
agree,
so much for your input and
so
everything.
You said after the Super Bowl, I'll be here.
Okay, you need to run for the – all right. Thank you so much. Guys, hope you guys enjoyed the show tonight. We still have so much to cover. I'm going to post this after Super Bowl week, bring it back again. And it was an awesome show. And you guys, for your listening, hope you guys can come back for your professional input. Thank you so much.